Hysteria by Ambrosian Lullaby. From Godstuck 2025. A competition run on the Homestuck Fan Author Coalition server. Read by Sam Gabriel. Based on the works of Andrew Hussey. The rain that pitters against stained glass windows goes unheard over the sounds of a melancholic tune. The symphony pours from a small orchestra and finishes on the strings of a violin. An audience of people line the walls of the church. Most seem more invested in conversation amongst themselves than the service. A burly man standing in front of the closed casket holds a bouquet close to his chest, clad in mourning black. He runs calloused, thick fingers over the soft petals of white lilies. His thick eyebrows paint an expression of exasperation on his gruff features. "Gone too soon, Nitram, but what did you really expect?" He speaks just above a whisper. "Kalkat." The tall woman on his arm stabs the point of a closed umbrella into the toe of his boot. Kalkat steps back from her in an attempt to keep pressure off of his newly injured foot, while she tucks a discordant dark curl behind her ear. "You could wait until we're in the car to make comments." She fiddles with the clasp on her handbag and matches his low volume. Kalkat sucks in a breath through his gritted teeth. The flowers in his arms are set to rest in the casket. "You know I'm right, Kanaya. It's not like we know the story down to the letter, but it's not that crazy to assume."
"Assume what?"
Kanaya's jade eyes narrow, and she tilts her face up to make sure he knows that she's looking down at him.
"That his own choices did him in. What's with that look? You know me. You know I agreed with the guy, but at the end of the day, our jobs don't change."
Kalkat moves to set his hands on his hips, pushing the open flaps of his suit jacket backwards as he does. The silver revolver in its holster on his hip shines proudly under the church's chandelier lighting.
"If you want to advocate for the supernatural, then be my fucking guest. But if it bites you in the ass, then that's on you. Seeing as we're at his funeral, I'd say he got bitten in the ass."
Even though Kalkat's voice gets quite loud by the time he's done speaking, they've not caught the attention of any other funeral goers. Kanaya shakes her head in disapproval.
"I've no idea who let you bless the body."
"Someone who wasn't paid enough to organize this funeral."
Kalkat clears his throat. He retrieves a small vial of clear liquid from a pocket on the inside of his coat, along with a string-sealed book. It takes him a second to struggle to undo the small tie keeping the covers together, another minute to fan through the pages of verses and scripture. Kalkat squints at the page he's landed on, shakes his head, and closes the book again.
"Shall you be preserved from all evil?"
He uncorks the vial and splashes the liquid over the flowers. As it drips over petals, plastic wrapping, and the wood finish of the casket, it seeps between the grain without much of a show.
"Part of me was hoping he'd be cursed, though the coffin would start shaking and the corpse would..."
"Casket," Kanaya corrects. "Coffins have six sides. This is a casket."
She takes the journal from Kalkat's loose grip to tuck it into her handbag.
"And I'd chide you for not reading the entire passage, but it doesn't matter."
A beat passes. Background conversations continue, unbothered, behind and around them. Kalkat motions back towards the pews and the main church doors.
"Ready to head out?"
"Since before we even walked inside."
The two turn, prepared to leave immediately. Unfortunately, a broad man with long hair, tanned skin, and tinted glasses puts a pause on their exit.
"Thank you for coming, Mother Superior."
He speaks in a firm tone.
"And Vantus, thank you for blessing... him."
"It's no issue. Brother's a hack, the service was lovely."
Kanaya makes an attempt at pleasantries and glances at Kalkat out of the corner of her eye to prompt him.
"Right, she's right. You put something great together, Aquaeus. The orchestra nearly made us cry."
Kalkat nods, the corner of his lip twitching down. Aquaeus nods back, giving the two a microscopic bow.
"I'm grateful for your role in that, as Mother Mariam said, lovely service."
"Anytime,"
Kalkat offers, only out of pleasantries. Both he and Kanaya wait as Aquaeus lingers. When the man finally bows again, after a moment's hesitation, Kanaya pushes open the church doors. They shut with a heavy sound, but the rain comes down even heavier. Now outside, Kalkat reaches into the same pocket he'd pulled the journal from to produce a box of cigarettes and a lighter. Kanaya's umbrella protects his flame from the rain as he sparks up.
"That definitely wasn't awkward. I never know how to actually talk to that guy."
Kanaya steals the cigarette from between Kalkat's fingers before he even gets his first puff.
"Couldn't have said it better myself."
She takes a drag before holding it out for him to grab with his teeth.
The fuck? Kakat takes the cigarette back between his fingers. Are you driving or am I?
It's your car, she says. The smell of tobacco hangs in front of her face.
That it fucking is, but I still thought I'd offer.
Kakat takes the first real steps away from the church, trusting Kanaya to follow close. He opens the passenger side door for her, and takes the umbrella as she gets in first. His cigarette still burns, so he cracks the back car window after turning his key just enough to power only the vehicle's accessories.
Every exorcist's funeral is the same, Kanaya sighs as her umbrella is shoved into the back seat. Everyone gets too caught up in trying to network since it's the only time a lot of us are in one place. There's more case offers and spread of rumors than talk of the deceased.
It's really funny you're complaining about that. What did you manage to pick up?
Haunted library. The case has been passed around a few times because the spirit is, and I quote, inconsistent.
Inconsistent?
That's what I heard, yes. Reports first thought it was just the library's manifest growing unstable and hostile. Recent notes point towards a haunting instead, but they can't place the spirit's typing. It throws books, resents lit flames. Kanaya trails off, hesitant about the next information she's about to reveal. Some ghost hunters are getting equipment interference.
Those half-baked frauds that try to emulate the Ghostbusters movies? Somebody get this shit off an online forum? Also, hold on, rewind. Library souls get hostile?
Senior exorcist, and you don't know how mistreatment of physical objects can lead to an angry manifestation.
I can't remember everything about everything, Kanaya. That's what the little book is for.
Kakat points towards the purse on top of her thigh.
And obviously I fucking know that, but the soul of a library is different from a forgotten stuffed animal.
Kanaya shrugs. Vandalized books can lead to enough discontent with repeat offenses. Church collections tend to be even tattier than normal. Anyway, why are we chasing this? Focus on the case notes, it's a haunting.
Right, right.
Kakat mumbles something about a Reddit story as he tosses his cigarettes into the center console.
It's probably just baby's first poltergeist. They fucking love libraries. So many books to throw around, and you mentioned that happening.
You'd think six other teams would have been able to exercise it before us, then. Kakat hums and flicks his cigarette butt at the window.
They're not us. Call me corny for saying that. Where is this place, anyway?
Kanaya stifles a chuckle as she reaches to fiddle with the dashboard GPS. One, you're corny. Two, it's luckily both in-state and not too far from here. I know how much you hate traffic.
I do hate traffic, he nods noncommittally.
The windshield wipers squeak horribly when the car properly flares to life. Looks like you're low on wiper fluid, Kanaya comments.
That's not fucking real.
You're thinking of blinker fluid. Wiper fluid is real. Kakat scoffs as he pulls out of the parking spot.
Semantics, Mariam. Wouldn't even need to use the wipers if it wasn't raining all the time out here.
That's West Virginia for you.
West Virginia can stop bending me over, tickling my balls, and fucking me in the ass with its over-emotional clouds. I miss Nevada.
The first stoplight they hit is red, and Kakat glares hard enough that it turns green. Nevada? Kanaya asks. She then purses her lips as she thinks. I miss Rome.
Rome? We were there for 2 days.
Exactly. It's such a shame the trip was so short. I would have liked an afternoon at the Piazza Navona to further explore Vatican City. Kakat sighs, slow to remember to roll up the back window.
Shit. Well, I can't argue with either of those. Beautiful places.
You'd come with.
Well, I have to.
You don't have to. Kakat looks up at their destination on the right side of the road. He squints skeptically, but then glances at Kanaya while waiting for a turn arrow.
Well, we can't be separated, and if you want to do something so badly, I'm not going to be a ball and chain.
You're hilarious. Kanaya rolls her eyes, but that's nice to hear.
As if you didn't know already.
Kakat accuses. I said what I said. Kakat huffs in response as he pulls into the closest available parking spot. He's the first to comment on the case location.
A campus library? I'm over 40. I can't pass for a college student.
It's a public library located on a university campus. You won't have to. Kanaya subtly retrieves her umbrella. Leave your gun in the car.
That's the shit a horror movie character hears right before the moment they need.
Turning over his shoulder to see Kanaya's unimpressed expression, Kakat cuts himself off with a sigh. He unclips the small strap that keeps it in its holster before letting it thump into the center console.
You know I'm right.
I'm sure that both campus security and local law enforcement would have loved to hear your argument. Kanaya is careful when she opens her umbrella and steps out first. She walks around the front of the car with trailing clicks from her black heels against the parking lot asphalt.
In other topics of conversation, how many times have I complained about working during business hours?
Kakat looks up at her when she opens his door. Thousands. One more complaint wouldn't hurt.
I hate working during business hours. Civilians complicate things.
Kakat fills his quota for the day as people, tables, chairs, and rows of bookshelves fill his vision.
fluorescent lights buzzing, clicking public computer keyboards, checkout scanner beeps, the minimal chatter between groups of college students sat at tables together. Every noise is quiet in the large archive. We stay out of their way and they stay out of ours, Kanaya whispers as she folds her umbrella and leaves it at the communal rack by the door. Let's walk.
And talk.
Karkat waves a hand as his partner leads him towards the closest clear aisles. She was thinking the same thing.
First observations. The lights overhead are fine, nobody seems disturbed, and the books aren't moving on their own, so it's most likely nothing in the main body of the library, or we're looking at something nocturnal like a mare that's fucking over passed out college kids.
Kanaya hums, feeling there's an option missing. Or something shy like a shade. We should firmly stick to paths without people and dig into deserted and dusty sections while it's still daylight hours. Just to check that possibility off the list.
Good thinking. How many sage sticks do you have in your purse?
Can I count without checking?
4?
More than enough. No reason to head back to the car.
Karkat checks all his pockets, making sure his lighter and phone are in his pants.
We only need 2. Can ward it with 1, then cleanse the room and banish the spirit with another.
Let's go. Kanaya tugs at her partner's wrist. She lets her gaze raise over the building's architecture, every divine painting on the high ceiling. Angels, balanced scales, clouds, golden leaves, her eyes narrow as if she'd be able to pick out every brushstroke. The second floor railed walkways, the carpet-lined staircases leading upwards.
Baroque.
But, I think the place is that old, and I guess abandoned sections could be physically dangerous and have led to an accident?
Karkat theorizes.
Possible, but marble is usually quite sturdy.
Mold in the books?
Kanaya physically stops in her tracks and turns to face Karkat. She stares at him, and then at the modern sign labeling the section they're next to.
130. Parapsychology and Occultism.
You think mold in an abandoned section of the library killed a student in the library and now they haunt it?
Or some sort of staff that hangs out over there, or some troublemakers, or a regular person looking for a quiet spot to study?
Karkat crosses his arms as possibilities rapidly fall from his chapped lips.
Doesn't matter how fancy this place is or how much divine imagery it has, it's on a college campus. Maybe someone was smoking weed near the mold.
Kanaya rolls her eyes and continues walking down the long hall. The fire escape door at the very end catches her attention like a bright flame.
There.
She pulls Karkat by his wrist toward the marked gray door.
Fire escape? Someone fell down the stairs and broke their neck?
No, just a way for us to go between floors without catching attention.
She triple checks that opening the door won't trigger an alarm before pushing their way into the stairwell.
Karkat takes his arm back. A section that goes down?
He raises an eyebrow.
We should hit the bottom and make our way up.
Kanaya nods, gripping the cold metal railing. Unlike the main body of the library, the fire escape stairs are made of thick cement. They're an eyesore of a modern addition to the building. Kanaya's high heels clack with each descending step.
That sound might give me a headache,
Karkat comments.
You can deal with it.
As we both know, I am a champion of just dealing with things. Truly the fucking best. Everyone weeps in awe of my natural-born talents to simply deal with anything.
I know you're just trying to fill the silence.
Guilty, Karkat frowns. Kanaya?
Yes?
Do these stairs feel really long to you?
Kanaya stops. She glances over the edge of the railing, which has started to feel smooth to the touch. The way down is... She can't see all the way down. She does notice that gray cement stairs and black metal railings seem to turn white at some point in the descent. She leans further in an attempt to get a closer look. Some sort of draft rushing upwards grabs her, and she swiftly grips the railing as it tries to pull her over and up. Kanaya's stomach flips, her eyes pop, and something in her brain tries to calibrate a new sense of... balance.
Kanaya!
Karkat's hands lock around her wrists as her grip starts to slip on the metal within her quickly sweating palms. They start to shake as if she's straining herself.
I'm fine! I'm fine!
She slowly drains the shock from her voice as she's forced to hold onto the railing so she doesn't float away.
We definitely found what we were looking for.
No shit, Karkat frowns, looking past Kanaya at the open stairwell center.
The draft is gone, but she's... Kakat, I am holding myself to this railing.
What do you mean? He asks. All he can hope for is some sort of expansion on her statement for him to understand how to help.
Like I'm doing a pull-up on it?
Lord. I've got you, Kakat huffs, just as Kanaya lets go of the railing. She falls straight up.
Her clothes don't follow the laws of physics, and neither does her hair. Where even her hairsprayed curls would still show some motion from being upside down, they hold as if her gravity is normal.
Kakat strains the same way he would if having to lift her. He reaffirms his grip on her forearms and pulls, taking two steps backward to safely tug Kanaya into the stairs. He slowly lowers her towards the ceiling. Her feet touch. She looks fine. Unnatural, but fine.
Kanaya. Kakat sounds dead serious. Off the record, don't tell Alond. That's freaking me out.
Kanaya's handbag clings normally to her side, and she takes a step up the underside of the stairs above Kakat as a test. Her hair bobs with the jump of her upward step.
If I told Alond about how this makes me feel, I might be forced to retire.
She hugs her bag and keeps walking up so that she's still heading ultimately down the stairwell with Kakat.
I might be sick.
And you're just gonna keep going?
Well, she stops and slowly turns. She looks up the stairs at Kakat, where he's on the ceiling for her.
Protocol says we send out a call. When we find something strange like this, we call.
He crosses his arms. Kanaya readjusts the way her bag strap digs into her shoulder and searches until she finds her phone.
When have you ever done anything according to protocol?
Kakat openly stares at his partner before pinching the bridge of his nose.
All the time, usually? My funeral blessing was the abridged version and doesn't count against me. I know what you were trying to go for there, but really?
I'm already messaging. Kanaya rolls her eyes, holding the phone down. I was making a joke.
Kakat rolls his own eyes, counting down the stairs until he's mutually face-to-face with Kanaya. She raises her phone enough for him to grab it at a comfortable height.
I wish it could have hit.
He stares at Kanaya's report detailing a sort of gravity-shifting well.
But it still might.
Kakat hands the phone back.
Because the next part of protocol is to keep investigating?
Senior Exorcist Vantus, it's well within your rights.
Convince me harder.
He takes the next step down.
What's this about? Did the gravity-shifting well also fill your head with demonic temptation? Don't answer that. You just freaked out and want to dig deeper in hopes that understanding whatever the fuck is happening will help you calm down. Am I right? Or am I right, Mariam?
Kanaya walks past him, shoulder-checking Kakat in the face.
Ow.
Kakat cradles his nose for a second.
All right. I went too far there and too close to the truth. Also damn straight that it's within my rights. We'll forego the fact that it's in yours too so that that one hits.
You can stop punching holes in my words, Kakat.
Where would you be without it?
After one last quip, Kakat continues down these strangely long stairs.
You wouldn't happen to know anything about West Virginia basement codes, would you?
Of course not.
Why'd I even try?
They have to be more than 20 stories worth of stairs deep into the earth. At least wherever they are isn't a natural stairwell anymore. Metal railings meld into marble banisters, cement steps doing the same. Kanaya kneels down on the ceiling. She draws a finger over the fusion line where cement seemingly drips and swirls into white stone.
Are you taking notes?
You've got my journal.
Kakat looks over the railing and another gust rushes down from the top. He ducks back into the stairwell to avoid it picking him up like Kanaya.
Mental notes. Lord knows you don't have enough room in that tiny thing for a fresh entry.
The walls around the two rumble. The motion and noises start at the top, moving down and shaking these seemingly sturdy walls with ill-timed tremors.
I'm always taking mental notes.
Kakat sturdies himself with the railing before walking ahead.
Let's keep on. I don't like this. Not a single door leading out of the stairwell, not one fire extinguisher lining the walls, but earthquakes?
Agreed.
Kanaya follows. Speckles of dust start to trickle down the center of the stairwell. A crumble of rock.
Kanaya!
Kakat pulls his supporting hands to his chest as a huge, broken chunk of cement whizzes down the open chute in the center of the room. Kanaya's already ahead of him, racing up the stairs as more and more evidence of the steps they'd already conquered start to fly past. Kakat kicks up into a sprint. He counts each step before a corner turn. The same number, 25, each time. He's not complaining about Kanaya's loud heel clicking now as destruction chases them.
Lord, if I knew I was going to be running and sweating like a motherfucker.
Kakat ditches his suit jacket as he rushes down the endless stairs.
It doesn't agree with gravity, one of those gusts from earlier appearing and making it fly upwards towards the rapidly crumbling steps for a moment.
This isn't a fucking ghost's doing, Kanaya!
I can tell! She shouts from her mirrored position on the stairwell's underside. Every hurried step in her high heels is a fall risk. She nearly trips, placing a stutter in her sharp clicks.
I heard that! Toss the shoes!
They're buckled at the ankles!
God damn it!
Kaka decides to save his breath. He spares a single second to look upwards over the railing, only for a large chunk of debris to come sailing down past him again.
I see a door, Karkat! Just two more levels down!
Definitely not suspicious, but all right!
Karkat skips two steps at a time, letting himself stumble into the walls as he scrambles down each set. The door is inconspicuous, a completely normal exit to this unusual fire escape, which makes it all the more suspicious. But it's their only option. Karkat's chest heaves as he braces himself before slamming his shoulder into the door. It doesn't budge.
Come on, come on!
He tries again. The door cries under his force, but it doesn't give. Dust starts to cloud the stair while leading Kanaya to cover her mouth and nose with the lapels of her suit jacket.
If only I had my gun to shoot the hinges off!
On a third battering, the door's lock gives. Karkat topples inside and Kanaya swiftly steps over the top of the doorframe. She's quick to shut the door behind them before reaching as high as she can in an attempt to help her partner, though he's far out of range.
That'll... definitely... Bruce.
Karkat grumbles in his heap on the floor. There's a soft gasp before every word, and he coughs from all the dust he'd inhaled before.
I just went... just when I thought this would be easy. Four sticks might not... be enough equipment.
We're lucky I still have my purse. Kanaya's arms gently drop to her sides, and with them, her eyes. They drag over the vast landscape on the way down to the marble ceiling. And she has to do a double take. The vast landscape. The room is so much larger than the library they first entered would have led someone to believe. The initial staircase's length probably should have prepared her for the height of the walls, but not for how far they stretched backwards. Karkat and Kanaya sat in what was, in the grand scheme of things, a simple nook in the wall. The bookshelves and books towered at the same height as the giants that would be of proportion to read from them. The only problem with that is giants wouldn't fit with all the regular human-sized staircases crowding the air and branching walkways everywhere. The world looked as if M.C. Escher had his way with it.
What is this?
Kanaya steps forward towards the edge, looking down at the huge drop towards the ceiling. There was the beginning of a staircase after a 3-foot drop, and another after triple that. Many more were scattered at the walls, but the former was the only one reasonably close enough to reach. Karkat was in a similar state of awe. It was bad enough he was already struggling to catch his breath after their escape, but the expanse before them attempts to leave him breathless.
Illusion?
He forces out.
Spatial distortion?
Kanaya asks with a question.
Do you have the SGG?
Strider's ghost guide? You still think it's a ghost? Didn't we both just agree it wasn't?
Karkat huffs and slowly shifts so that he sat up on the floor.
It's in the back of my journal. Paraphrased, but the important parts are there.
That's all that matters. Kanaya similarly drops to the ceiling of their nook. She digs through her handbag for the handwritten Bible. And I don't, but I still want to properly run through the checklist.
I'm thinking it's either a demon or some human practicing unsanctioned witchcraft.
Karkat shuts his eye, and just as he does, a tone echoes through the large library. It's the strike of a harpsichord, a single beat on a string. It's followed by the gruff noises of marble sliding against marble, and wood creaking as it bends. Kanaya looks up from the journal to see the staircases start to shift, and the room before them shrink down just slightly. Over the edge again, the staircase below has gotten slightly closer.
What note was that?
Karkat asks above her. His eyes are still shut, yet to see the changes to the room.
It was a harp, but what note?
Kanaya slowly closes the journal in her lap. Stunned by what they've come across, she has to force words out of her mouth to not leave Karkat unanswered.
I couldn't tell you.
I have a theory.
Karkat starts, and Kanaya remembers why he's a professional. They haven't had such a serious job in such a long time that it's easy to forget the grouchy man she's sworn to work with genuinely is.
I'm listening.
We're looking at a labyrinth. Page 232.
Kanaya reopens the book, flipping through each hand-numbered page until she finds the entry Karkat is referring to. The page details endless mazes that pop up in random places. Little pocket dimensions in corporate meeting rooms, home basements, and school closets that only close when the center is reached.
They're incredibly rare, with only 5 spotted in the last 3 centuries, and they tend to go years on their own without being discovered.
The line is marked with last being updated a year ago, and a note in the margins about how there could have been a lot more than 5, and some located in abandoned buildings that are still undiscovered.
I like your theory,
Kanaya says with a skeptic tone in her voice, but that doesn't explain the six other teams. They came back to report failure and behavioral notes. They didn't get lost. Also, there was no mention of any of this.
Karkak groans. Fuck, you're right. Give me a second. I know these sorts of tricks. It was my usual before you, and you're used to working with spirits. Right, Reverend Mother?
Not that there had been long before Kanaya and Karkat's lengthy career, but there was a time. She sighs, flipping through the pages about the labyrinth anyway. I'm all ears for any of your ideas, because you're not wrong. All I'm currently thinking is pointing the finger at a demon. I'm certain I have a cross, actually.
As Kanaya trails off to find it in her handbag, the same harp plucks the same string somewhere far in the distance. The walls move inwards, but extend further up. Each staircase accommodates.
Then, the harp. The sound corresponds with the movement, so maybe something's playing it,
Karkas says. Could be playing itself,
Kanaya hums.
Her own note turns victorious as she pulls engraved metal from her purse.
Karkas scoffs.
That's why I said maybe. Anyway, you should take inventory, and then we try the door we came from. We're not gaining anything except our wits while sitting here, and I know that we're both perfectly capable of doing that while also getting to work.
Kanaya nods. They have Karkat's journal, 4 sage sticks, a cross, a night vision camera, salt, and more vials of holy water. All of that and Kanaya's regular trinkets like her phone, pens, lipstick, a loose receipt or two, and keyring. She reorganizes so that all of their tools are at the very top after handing Karkat one of the sage bundles.
Karkat himself only had his phone and lighter.
The harp sounds 2 more times while they're busy prepping, and the room gets shorter and wider, then even wider and tall enough for giants again.
Karkat and Kanaya both stand, and find that if they reach up at the same time, they can grip each other's forearms.
Since we don't know what's out there, I'll open the door.
Karkat sets his other hand on the knob. His grip on Kanaya tightens.
And I'll keep a hold of you while you peer through, just in case.
All right. Kanaya pats herself down with a free hand and sets her purse on the ceiling. She also takes a second to remove her heels. They'll just continue to cause her trouble if she doesn't. She takes a quiet minute to herself to be enamored with the fact they still stick to the ceiling without being on her socked feet, and she doesn't drop without them.
Cut me off.
3, 2,
Karkat turns the knob.
1.
The heavy door swings open with Karkat hiding behind it. It reveals the stairwell they came from is blocked by broken chunks of marble and splintered wood.
Kanaya doesn't move.
Karkat slams the door shut again, holding it closed with his body.
What did you see?
He asks.
It's blocked.
Kanaya gathers her shoes and clasps their buckled straps around the strap of her purse, so she doesn't have to carry them. Which means we'll need to find another way out anyway.
Just what I wanted. Oh, and don't tell me we don't have signal anymore. Should we even bother to check?
It doesn't hurt.
I wish I'd brought my cigarettes. My cigarettes and my gun!
Karkat stands on a staircase that runs towards a large chandelier hanging from the ceiling. Golden crosses hang from crystal beaded lines. Kanaya walks along the underside of the same steps.
I wish I chose to wear socks instead of tights. The stairs are cold.
Tone incoming,
Karkat mutters, and they both stop.
Are you dizzy at all?
Closer than at the nook they started in, a harp plays far in the distance. The bookcases, chandelier, painted ceiling, and carpeted marble floors all dilate.
No.
The staircase they stand on creaks, and Kanaya drops to sit as it starts to move.
I was when it flipped me, but I've felt fine since.
The staircase slowly raises. Karkat grips the railing beside him when it swings counterclockwise. Another set of stairs comes close enough to force him to duck.
Really?
Really.
Kanaya rises again when the stairs finally decide where to settle.
If that changes, you'll say something.
If that changes, then I'll say something.
Karkat falls silent.
Karkat?
It doesn't last very long.
Yeah?
You sound anxious.
Well, Mariam, I thought you were a lot smarter than you give yourself credit for, and you already give yourself quite a bit of credit, so I also thought I didn't have to state the obvious.
Karkat stops at the top of the stairs, looking down at the room that changes below them. If he leans forward far enough, he can catch a glimpse of Kanaya directly below.
You're upside down, and I've had time to think.
Time to think?
What if it's a timed effect, and you suddenly drop?
Kanaya looks up towards the floor. It's a long way down, at least thrice the height of the original library they entered.
I know that I said it, but don't think too hard about it. We came up here for a vantage point. See anything? Because I don't.
You're lucky I'm going to let you verbally walk away from that now that you've made me more anxious than I was.
Kanaya starts to speed walk down the walk where the staircase leads into.
There's nothing around. Let's pursue the harp.
Speaking of, tone incoming.
It's the same note every interval.
The chandelier next to them shrinks and the ceiling gets closer.
There's probably some sort of app that can identify that.
If only we had a signal, Kanaya says.
I don't think any backup that's on the way can even get to us, she presses.
Okay.
Kirkett stops, crouches down, and peers into the underside of the platform.
You said you weren't going to let me verbally walk away. I know what you're doing.
Reminding you of everything that's going wrong?
Yes.
Kanaya stares into his peeking eyes. Where would you be without it?
Damn it all. We can't catastrophize that hard yet. We're professionals. We've had years of weird shit go down.
Now you're trying to rationalize.
Were you sitting on all of this the whole time? Just waiting for me to actually crack? You can go to Rome by yourself.
Kirkett stands up again. You made an oath and took a vow.
I apologize.
Kanaya almost laughs. Don't think too hard about it.
I apologize.
Kirkett reaffirms.
I'm fucking with you.
Kanaya speeds past, stepping over a set of stairs that threads underneath the walkway.
It kills the nerves.
A beat passes.
Do you remember when you first told me that, Kirkett? You're so crass. I'd yet to get to know you and work felt miserable.
The walkway tilts down into a new staircase that seems to shoot directly to the floor.
Yeah, you were finally fed up in 2 seconds from trading me out for a different exorcist. What about it?
Kanaya hums below.
You were right. Kills the nerves.
You don't really think it's on a timer, do you?
Honestly?
Honestly. Kirkett clicks his tongue against the roof of his mouth.
Being 1000% honest with you and going off of observations in retrospect, the wind in the stairwell that flipped you over moved in both directions. If I had to guess, an updraft initially flipped you, so a downburst would set you upright.
If it wasn't blocked off, we could have attempted to test that theory.
Only just had it. But that couldn't have been the only instance of shit to change gravity here and dispelling whatever this shit is.
Kirkett waves his arms around the shifting library.
Well, that might even fix it.
Going from anxious to hopeful, are we?
Let's not get back into it.
Kirkett mutters as the ground gets closer and closer.
Hey, where the fuck are you meant to stand?
Kirkett's eyes raise over the paths and steps all above, then below. I might have to make a jump, but I'll figure it out. If anything, you might have to tug me around like a balloon.
Lord, no, you're heavier than you think.
Kirkett.
Not like that. You're not just a floating balloon, you've got proper gravity. Well, not proper gravity, but you get what I'm saying? It's like lifting you, pulling you down whatever direction it is.
His hands make a beeline for his pants pockets. They shuffle around, grow frantic in their search, and Kirkett groans when they stop.
My fucking cigarettes!
The deeper into the library, the more warped things become. Sections of bookshelves extend outward like drawers, and they curve as they stretch towards the painted ceiling. Books paint the floors from where the leaning shelves have lost their grip. The harp is louder, the tones sounding different, distinguishable as a real melody. Distance had warped the song. 4 notes and then it repeats. Kanaya reaches up, and Kirkett grabs her wrist. In a burst of effort, he swings her around to throw her onto the underside of his own platform. Kirkett brushes his sweaty hands onto his pants.
The Dies Irae, maybe?
Probably. Kanaya is close enough to the floor to touch it. She runs her hands along the red carpet above her head as she walks.
It always is.
It always is,
Kirkett echoes.
You want to know my thoughts, Kirkett?
I always do.
Kanaya smiles. The library has too many holy signs for a demon to be able to take root. Whatever we're looking at is angelic.
I was thinking the same thing. Even if we're in a split-off dimensional rift of some remixed bullshit, it's kept the same imagery in imitation.
Finally close enough to the floor, Kirkett steps down. His shoes leave dirt on the red carpet.
Best trick to beat a maze? Stand on top of the walls.
Or walk along the floor.
When your maze is in the air? Yes.
Kirkett looks down towards Kanaya and motions towards the end of the hall where the harp's noises are coming from.
Let's close this case and call it a day. Shit is a lot more streamlined than we first thought, which is perfect because I hate surprises more than civilians.
Confident now? There could still be a surprise.
You're close enough to the floor that if the gravity shift is timed, you'll fall harmlessly, and the thing responsible for all our initial disorientation is making my tinnitus flare up. My biggest concern is over. All I'm left with is a wish to go home and take a nap.
Kanaya laughs behind her hand. I could still break my neck if I fall wrong.
But you won't.
Kirkett points at her as they approach what looks like an oversized mouse hole in the wall. It's hidden between some shelves and where the music sounds loudest.
Because you'll end up tucking and rolling or something.
Would I? Kanaya doesn't hide her laugh this time. All right, enough. Grab me and pull me in. She holds her arm out and Kirkett grips. He walks into the shadowed room to finally find something their size besides all the stairs and paths. The room itself is the same size as the fire escape. A golden harp stands proudly in the center, alone under a spotlight. It plucks its own strings. Kanaya lets herself down onto the ceiling, and she looks on in amusement. It's a divine artifact. Must have fallen and buried itself here. Its raw power warps reality.
Stupid piece of divine trash.
Kirkett takes 2 steps towards the harp before he turns to circle it.
No wonder they've been getting evidence of a haunting up top. This shit's down here. Its presence was leaking out of this place. If you're right about its nature, then I was right when I said we're in a labyrinth. Kanaya walks along the ceiling until she's positioned above the instrument.
Really?
Yeah. If you read more of my damn notes, then you'd know labyrinths always appear to protect or hide something. Monsters, prisoners, weapons, artifacts. Just nobody fucking wandered into it this time because they're jackasses that only do half the job. I'm looking for a ghost room in the main body of the building.
Karkat reaches out. Don't touch that, it could petrify you.
Kanaya drops her suit jacket right into his hand.
I'll seal it. You carry it out of here.
It feels anticlimactic as Kanaya digs through her purse for some paper and a pen. She ends up using the receipt from her pre-funeral coffee.
Lalan's going to love this.
I thought we weren't going to tell her.
As Kanaya folds the thin, drawn-on sheet between the harp strings, the air around them starts to morph and pull towards the object. Karkat quickly covers the instrument with the jacket.
We aren't, but she's going to read the case report.
Kanaya's stomach flips again as the cramped walls visibly pull and tug towards the center of the room. In a blurred and dizzying spiral, marble washes out into dank and disgusting gray. As the red carpet seeps into the dank ground, Kanaya falls with a shout.
Gotcha!
Karkat drops the harp to catch her.
Shit!
And he sticks a leg out to keep it upright while she recovers.
I nearly forgot about that part.
Kanaya stands as fast as she can in order to right the artifact. There's a set of stairs behind them, grody cement below, and unflattering dusty walls.
Is that mold?
Karkat points at one of the nondescript corners. Kanaya rebuckles her high heels.
Instead of pointing at the mold, you should start walking. You have a couple flights to drag a golden harp up to meet with our arriving backup.
I do?
You do.
Kanaya's heels click on the first step up. This is your aforementioned surprise.
Damn it.
The Homestuck Fan Author Coalition is a place for authors to write, brainstorm, discuss, and collaborate. Link available in description. Suburban Jungle by Michael Guy Bowman. Special thanks to Sakiko. If you would like me to record a story, voiceover, or character, please get in touch with me using the contact information on my website, which is located at samgabrielvo.com. And there you can find links to other stories that I've read, my Discord server, and various ways to support me. And finally, as always, thank you for listening.